The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, it's a small school district, but still newly named Decatur City School Superintendent Dr. Jima Whitaker talks about initiatives before she officially starts July 1st. And it's a tradition, Closer Look's college graduates profiles. Well, we begin with a first-generation graduate sharing her journey and why she's choosing a career in psychology. And in just a moment, I'll speak with Georgia Representative Tanya Miller, who is responding to Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones' request to the University System of Georgia. Now, what does the Lieutenant Governor want? He wants the system to provide information regarding what the 26 member institutions are spending on DEI programs. The Lieutenant Governor wants details on personnel and the purpose of any DEI-related program. Now, this comes after Chancellor Sonny Perdue described the $66 million spending cut to the system as, quote, a significant impact on institutions and the services that students and families depend on to advance their prosperity and help Georgia succeed, close quote. So we'll have her response to the Lieutenant Governor's request. That's all just ahead. But first, a major new initiative regarding housing affordability from the City of Atlanta. Flanked by officials from HUD, members of the City Council, members of the Dickens administration, and other major stakeholders today, it was announced a partnership between the City and the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. Here's President and CEO Frank Fernandez.
And today, we are here together to celebrate and announce a $100 million commitment from the Whitehead and Woodruff Foundation to the Community Foundation's Affordable Housing Plan to produce and preserve thousands of units of affordable housing in our community.
And after that announcement, well, it was followed by Mayor Dickens.
Today I'm announcing that my administration plans to work with the City Council to pass legislation to authorize an additional $100 million bond on top of this $100 million that Frank just spoke about.
Now, Mayor Dickens has long touted the need for 20,000 units to come online or be preserved by the year 2030. WABE's Dormaya Vance will have more during All Things Considered, hosted by Jim Burse. And also a note of disclosure, the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta is a WABE underwriter. Now, as mentioned, Georgia Representative Tanya Miller joins me to talk about a recent request from Georgia Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones. As we heard, the Lieutenant Governor wants to know what the member institutions of the University System of Georgia are spending on DEI, who, where, when, why, and what, pretty much. So, Representative Miller, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Rose. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
As you know, that $32.4 billion budget, which was approved by the legislature, includes a significant cut to the University System of Georgia, $66 million. Just first of all, your overall reaction to that?
Well, obviously, that was disappointing. It was disappointing to us. It came very late in the budget process. Of the $66 million, the University System of Georgia is projecting that about $2 million of that will result in cuts to HBCUs, our state-funded HBCUs. So we have Fort Valley University, who is looking at about a $673,000 cut, Albany State, about an $832,000 cut, and Savannah State about a $560,000 cut. Mm-hmm. These are obviously substantial cuts to our smaller institutions. I mean, it's not just HBCUs that will disproportionately bear the brunt of these mm-hmm. cuts. It's our smaller schools, rural colleges, and so it's just very concerning for us to see that happening, especially at a time when Georgia has a significant surplus. The state mm-hmm. is doing quite well financially, largely in part due to funds we got during COVID.
I have heard lawmakers over the years describe the University System of Georgia as, and I'm quoting here, the haves and the have-nots, in a sense. That's nothing new. When you look at some of the larger systems, institutions like UGA. Now, also, UGA is a larger institution maybe than some of the other ones, but they also have a very robust athletic department as well. I've heard folks go back and forth about all of that. So when Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones sends a letter, and I have the letter here that he sent to Chancellor Perdue, asking about the DEI initiatives and programs at the member institutions, when you first heard about that, your reaction?
Well, first, it was a little bit shocking that he sent that request in response to Chancellor Perdue criticizing the cuts to the university system. So it's almost retaliatory. It feels like it's retaliatory. And he's going after, in essence, diversity, equity, and inclusion programming. That's really what he was highlighting in that letter. You know, we are struggling to and fighting to increase diversity in our colleges and universities, particularly when it comes to underrepresented minorities, African Americans. So there's this double sort of whammy assault on HBCUs with the funding cut, and then what seems to be an attack, a gearing up to attack diversity and inclusion in our universities along the lines of what we have seen in Florida and other states. So it's just very troubling and disheartening to see this political culture war spilling in to our institutions that already struggle, really, Rose, to make sure that the student body represents the population in the state of Georgia.
I'm going to come back to DEI in a moment, but in the letter here to Chancellor Perdue and Lieutenant Governor Jones writes, quote, "I and other state leaders fully expect the university system will find the ability to live within its considerable means, which include over $500 million in reserves and more than $3.1 billion in unrestricted state funds appropriated to the system for the upcoming fiscal year." Response to that?
Well, I think that's sort of a red herring argument. One, 80% of that 500, about 80% of that $500 million surplus belongs to the six largest institutions in the state, four of which are the big four, right? Our research institutions, UGA, Georgia Tech, Georgia State. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Augusta University. So it really has almost nothing to do with the impact that these cuts will have on smaller schools.
On the final day of the legislative session, as you know, there was a great bit of debate regarding USG and its spending. Now, Senator Blake Tillery chairs the Appropriations Committee, and here's some of what he told the Senate.
Article 1, Section 8 that you asked about specifically. Article 1, Section 8 is extremely clear, and I'm glad you brought that up. There's a lot of comments about that this will be disproportionately impactful to smaller schools. That does not have to be the case. You see, what you brought up, Article 8, says that when we give money to the Board of Regents, the Board of Regents are in charge of how that will be done. It's essentially a block grant. So while you do see budgetary items and titles, teaching, Skidaway Island, other things under the Regents budget, those things are program areas. But we block grant it to USG. They can spend it honestly any way they want. If they come outside of a program area, they will get an audit, a ding from the auditor. They'll send them a nasty letter and say you're supposed to be in this program area. But overall, they are constitutionally allowed to spend that money when it comes to them as they please.
So, Representative Miller, if in a sense these institutions, they have every right to spend their money on what they deem they're important for not only its student body, but for their institutions as a whole. Do you think Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones really understands that? Then why are you asking for this information? What do you need it for?
I mean, listen, I won't presume to get inside the mind of Burt Jones, but I will say that Chancellor Perdue has been pretty clear about this issue. You know, he has complied and will comply with this request. Frankly, it is his role constitutionally by the Georgia Constitution to manage the Board of Regents. And so this micromanaging that is happening at the Georgia General Assembly is really sort of misplaced energy. I think we have someone who is committed to doing what he believes is in the best interest of the Board of Regents. And we ought to be funding higher education. It's just the smart thing to do. It has significant workforce implications. And of course, as we talked about, you know, we have state funded lucky to have state-funded HBCUs in this state. So I would just urge the General Assembly and the governor, when we come back and revisit this budget, to amend the budget to replace these funds.
And we should note, Closer Look reached out to Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones' office. We have not got a response from anybody, and we're also working to try to secure an interview with Chancellor Perdue. I want to go back to these DEI programs for a moment as well, because in that letter to Chancellor Perdue from Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones, he says, quote, talking about DEI, these programs are particularly concerning when taxpayer funds are used to enforce the type of intellectual and political conformity that appears to be the hallmark of many campus DEI initiatives. He goes on to say, in my view, rather than promoting the mission of public education, when used in this way, such programs inhibit the ability of colleges and universities to promote academic and intellectual freedom in both their course offerings and community events. I hope you and other leaders of our university system share these concerns.
Well, you know, I mean, we've sort of heard this is the same old song and dance that we are hearing from certain segments of the right and certain segments of the Republican Party. They are designed to get at this idea that institutions of higher learning are these bastions of sort of liberal thought and indoctrination, which, you know, isn't true. And I think he cited in particular an incident where some students protested a conservative speaker whose ideas they did not believe in.
That was, I believe, at Stanford University, I believe.
That's correct. And so, you know, this is part of what college is about. It's about the exchange of ideas. It's about protesting and free thought and teaching students to think freely and to speak up for themselves. And there is just, I don't think, any legitimacy to this idea that more diversity weakens our educational system. I think it's the opposite.
Have you heard from faculty and staff at these institutions who are concerned that they may be targeted or their programs may be targeted?
Well, yeah, there have been some institutions that have come out and publicly said, look, we think we are doing DEI exactly the way we're supposed to be doing it. It's successful. It's working. Our schools are successful. Our state is successful. We are, you know, we're not dealing with the brain drain that other states are dealing with in Georgia. So, you know, please let the higher education folks deal with higher education. And so I expect to see more of that and hear more of that. And I hope we do. If these legislators don't really do what they need to do and put this money back into the budget.
You have friends over on the Senate side. Is there any talk with someone or some type of other caucus or anybody sitting down with Lieutenant Governor Jones and talking this through?
Yeah, well, I think that now that folks like you and other people in the media are really focusing on this issue and what it means, we have heard both the head of appropriations in the House and Senate say that they are open to discussions that would find a way to replace the $66 million cut, which I think is good news. Mm-hmm. We will see what happens. Obviously, the governor supports, us, returning this funding back to our institutions of higher learning. So I expect, I am hopeful, I'll say, mm-hmm. that these conversations will continue and we will get the funding back and more because, you know, we're already operating at somewhat of a deficit as a result of enrollment being down after COVID. And so really, let's get this money back in with an eye towards particularly making sure our HBCUs and smaller schools have the funding that they need to stay afloat.
You mentioned the state surplus, which Governor Brian Kemp has been touting for a while now. Are there any other changes within the education system as a whole that you would like to see? I mean, we've had conversations about the Hope Scholarship and scholarships on merit and need and things of that nature. Any other initiatives that you think need overhauling within how Georgia regulates its education, public education system?
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. You know, we have had lots of conversations about the need to have some component of HOPE to be need-based so that it can reach more students. We have talked about expanding pre-K in the state of Georgia and appropriately funding our public schools. education in that way. We have talked about revisiting the QBE formula, which is decades old. Mm-hmm. The way that we fund public education is outdated and it needs to be revisited. So there are just lots of things that I think if Democrats and other folks at the General Assembly had their way, we would be talking about and using the surplus to really invest back in the people of Georgia and our young people. Absolutely.
Georgia Representative Tanya Miller, we appreciate you taking the time on such short notice. Thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you, Rose. It was a pleasure to be here.
You're listening to Closer Look. When we come back, newly named superintendent for the Decatur City Schools District. We'll talk to her in just a moment. We're back.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. On July 1st, Dr. Jima Whitaker will begin her new role as superintendent for Decatur City Schools. Now, she's currently serving as the Deputy Chief Academic Officer for Fulton County Schools, where she oversees a $150 million budget and supervises assistant superintendents. So, wow, let's talk about transitioning from one of the area's largest systems to one of the smallest. Dr. Jima Whitaker, incoming superintendent for Decatur City Schools, welcome to Closer Look.
Oh, thank you so much, Rose, for that welcome. And yes, I am excited to and thrilled to be coming to the City Schools of Decatur. Right. I am currently in Fulton as their Deputy Chief Academic Officer.
So I want to back up a little bit because I now want to give you the opportunity to shout out that one teacher or two that made a big difference in your life. I don't know if they're listening, but you never know.
Never know. Well, one teacher that really made a difference was Miss Mosley. Mm-hmm. So as a child, I had a lot of teachers that made a difference in my life. Mm-hmm. But specifically when I was in high school, there were a couple of challenges that happened just in my life. And Miss Mosley said, this is a defining moment for you, but it's going to define you and it's going to define you in a positive way versus a negative way. So Miss Mosley, thank you so much for ensuring I was on that right track in 11th grade in September, which anyone that knows anything about education, that is a very, very critical time when it comes to your future.
11th grade, did you have any idea that education would be a path for you then?
No, I did not. At that point in time, I thought I was going to be a doctor, but it was going to be a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of concerns in the home, if you will. I was in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm originally from. And as far as mental health and what mental health means and the way it's demonstrated in 2023, it was actually demonstrated back then in the 1980s.
Take that further for our listeners.
Yeah, we didn't know what it all meant, but essentially my mother, she was schizophrenic. And so by that, there was a lot of challenge around that in the 80s and the 90s and how to navigate that as an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. And what that meant in our family. And so there was a lot of challenge there. And to make a long story short, she was murdered when I was 16 years old. And at that juncture, at that point is when I really could have gone in a different way. But it was a teacher that said, this is not going to be the defining moment in your trajectory to go backwards, but actually propel you forward.
And Dr. Whitaker, I had no idea of that, and that is so tragic for anyone, but especially a child to endure. And so when you talk about that, and I guess when listeners hear this, and if folks don't understand that sometimes you have no idea what students are dealing with when they're not inside the school. Now, that's not as an excuse all the time, but it's an explanation for what some of our students are having to endure. And districts have to, when they can, provide these wraparound services, which I think I've said about a million times on this program that we talk about, that the districts, they have to have to help students because you have no idea what they're coming out of.
Yeah, that is so key and so critical. And so a lot of my career has been focused on not only ensuring that students have academic success, which is how we define our traditional reading, writing, or arithmetic, but also when it comes to the supporting the whole child in their whole child development. That is something that is critical because of the situations children are facing, whether it's in the school and also outside of the school. A student who is hungry has a challenge and must obviously be fed in order to learn. A student that wants to learn how to read must be able to see. And so there are certain things that not only is it the school system, but really it's partnership with the community to ensure we are leveling the playing field and ensuring all students can learn and they can perform at high levels.
You look at Fulton County Schools, you all have about, what, 94,000, 95,000, somewhere around there, students?
It's about 90,000 students, yeah. Yes.
And how many at City Schools of Decatur?
Oh, City Schools of Decatur is about 5,000, pretty in between 5 and 6. Yeah, so there's definitely a smaller amount of students, but still the challenges that students face, whether they're in a school system that has, you know, 90,000 students or a school system that has 6,000 students, the challenge is still there. And so I'm excited about that leadership and being able to fully wrap my arms around the students of the City Schools of Decatur.
Why is this district for you the first step? I don't know if you're going to be superintendent in other districts, but this is your first time being a superintendent, right? So is this, this was the perfect little fit for you as you take on a huge leadership role, top leadership role. And you're right, regardless of the size now, but when you're at the top, everything comes to you, the good, the bad. And if it hits the media, then you know as well. So
the opportunities are vast. Yes, they are. And this was the right step for me. I have communicated often and widely that I consider the City Schools of Decatur as a gem. And one of the things or the attributes of a gem is that it's hard to find. It's something that definitely is rare and is hidden. It's a treasure. And the City Schools of Decatur is exactly that. It is hidden. It's hard to find sometimes when you think about the larger districts that surround the school system. Mm-hmm. However, the City Schools of Decatur is just as diverse economically as well as ethnically as the other systems that I've worked in here in the Atlanta metro area.
And here's something that pretty much every district is dealing with, and we talked about it earlier, affordable housing here in the Atlanta area. Decatur is an expensive place to live. I just had a conversation with Mayor Garrett about this, and the Decatur School Board is actually working to provide teachers with affordable housing.
Yes.
How key is that and or problematic? And if you can't get that, because you want to retain teachers and accommodate students as well.
Exactly. The quality of life for any employee is important. And that quality of life stems from multiple aspects. Obviously, around your commute, we know that the Atlanta metro area definitely has its challenges at times. But then also when it comes to affordable housing, I want to be as close to my community and really be embedded within the community to serve the community. And knowing that our school board has said this is going to be a priority, we are going to work with our other elected officials to ensure that we are recruiting as well as retaining high quality staff and to really put that where our pockets are, which is to say, to help that with that affordable housing. I want to just thank the school board for that leadership.
So you all have 10 schools, I think a virtual academy, and you've got an early childhood learning center.
Yes.
So, but Decatur, and I talked about this again with the mayor. Look, everybody loves Decatur. Everybody want to live in Decatur that can afford to live in Decatur. But do you worry about enrollment being an issue in terms of too many kids at some point? You know, and I asked the mayor this about annexation. She was like, eh, you know, that's me paraphrasing what she said. But, you know,
yes.
You all able to, and then also having diversity in that student enrollment. What concerns you about that?
Well, I will say that I don't think our enrollment is going to be something we cannot sustain. Our school board is extremely diligent in that oversight and working with me as their new superintendent, new CEO, to think through and strategically plan for the growth that has happened thus far and the growth that is coming. When it comes to the diversity of our district, that diversity is something that is widely embraced. Mm-hmm. When I think about our new strategic plan and all indicator, it is one that really focuses on the students. It embraces all of our students and has really where you not only is equity woven in between all of it, but it focuses also on inclusivity. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the things that when you think about the diversity of our district, that we're able to say we are going to have a plan to address the needs for all students, as we're all indicator.
Let's move then to overall culture as well, because mm-hmm. the district is had to pay out a pair of federal lawsuits. He had to pay out some money for a pair of federal lawsuits, one for a teacher who felt she was punished for defending her child who was videotaped saying a racial slur. There's another noting that former Superintendent Dr. David Duty took more vacation days than he was allowed at all that. And the last check, there's another lawsuit alleging the school board removed one of their critics from the district. Is this concerning for you? And perhaps there is a need for, you don't want to call it a change in culture, but at least laying down the foundation for how you would like to see this district operate and people treat each other and people follow, you know, checks and balances and be fair.
Yes. All of those challenges that you've mentioned, Rose, I'm keenly aware. I've been in the metro area for about 25 years mm-hmm. now, specifically in education. And so those kind of challenges are known. But what I do know is as we refocus mm-hmm. everyone on students and student outcomes, it's going to bring about a change in culture where it's my responsibility as the superintendent to refocus the adults on students and student outcomes. I've had the pleasure over the past 2 weeks to be in school buildings, talking with teachers, talking with students, talking with leaders about all of the things that our district is doing very well, but also having critical conversations about ways in which we can improve. Mm-hmm. And those opportunities are the opportunities I will continue to listen to in this first phase of my entry into the city schools of Decatur.
Now, it's your first interview with Closer Look, but everybody gets this question when they get a new position, and that's why they're on the show. And that is, you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Talk about your leadership style. What are the characteristics of an effective leader that you feel you can bring to this district?
Yes. So I would say my leadership style is really grounded in my core beliefs. The first belief that I have is that equity is the vehicle for excellence. And that equity is driven and really through and by and for all students. Mm-hmm. So I need all of the adults in place that really understand what it means to have equitable outcomes as well as equitable access for students. That second belief is one that leadership matters. Mm-hmm. And I am truly thankful for the school board for their opportunity given to me, but also thankful for their leadership. And that's where it begins as we work together. But I believe leaders should do two things. One, identify barriers to that whole child development as well as academic development that I've talked about thus far. After you identify those barriers, be able to problem solve our way through it to determine what's necessary for students. And then that third piece of my leadership, which is critical, is around engagement. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that engagement should be inspirational, and that as we have all of our stakeholders, all of our community, our students, as well as our teachers engaged, we are going to inspire outcomes for students that will be transformational.
And how do you deal with criticism?
Oh, I take criticism. I think criticism is your friend.
You were the first person to ever say that on this program. I've been doing it for 8 years.
Well, I take criticism and I think of it as my friend because I understand that iron does sharpen iron. And so if I cannot take feedback and understand what feedback is to do for me, which is to make me better, then I'm not growing. So I stay in a learning stance, and I do understand that feedback is something that is important, but it's something that's important so you can grow.
And finally, as we wrap up, and you just heard the conversation I had with Representative Miller about issues at the higher education that some folks have. We're in this space where there's challenges to how we teach history, DEI, critical race theory, all that, which a lot of folks get wrong in terms of definition. How do you see all of this impacting what educators are put in the classroom to do, particularly at your level, with the from kindergarten on up?
There is something in our school systems which are called the Georgia Standards of Excellence. And those standards are given to us by the Georgia Department of Education. That is exactly what we teach. Now, are there opportunities for us to celebrate the diversity that is within the community? Of course. That celebration of the different cultures is what is expected. And that starts as early as really before kindergarten, but you want to raise your children and bring your children up because we do have a center that starts as early as birth, basically here in the city schools of Decatur, all the way through 12th grade. You want students to be able to appreciate and celebrate all cultures. And by doing that, that does not mean I am making another culture or another portion of the district or a portion of the community feel bad because I'm celebrating another. And so the standards are the standards. That's what our district is measured by when it comes to our mastery and what students should know, understand, and be able to do. But you do not learn history in a vacuum. You learn history when you also appreciate the diversity in the fabric that has made up this country.
And with certain organizations calling for certain book bans out of school libraries, how do you plan to, I don't know if you've had any issues with that. You know, I know a lot of folks have, but how do you plan to navigate through that? You know, because parents have varying views. So you have an open door policy. You will listen to people?
Well, understand that whether the legislation that is currently been passed or even future legislation, it's my role as the superintendent to ensure that we have policies and that we have procedures in place to analyze whatever the grievance may be. And so I will work with the school board and I will work with staff to ensure that our policies are aligned to that legislation, as well as it's really truly communicating the desires of the board and in accordance to, obviously, that law.
Have you had to explain critical race theory to people who had it wrong?
I have. I actually have a, most do not know, but my bachelor's degree is in African American studies with a minor in English. So I did a lot of reading of a lot of things around a lot of different topics that are oftentimes topic of debate at the moment. But as I said before, it's the understanding and the appreciation of all history so that students are able to think critically about their life that they're living and the way they'll move forward.
And come the fall on that first day, the night before, how excited will you be?
I'll be extremely excited. I will be extremely excited. I will have a full day that day. I'm quite certain of it, starting with more than likely transportation and also our crossing guards here in the city schools of Decatur, just really being there and be able to appreciate them from the beginning of the day to the end of the day and all of that in between.
And which school cafeteria are you going to eat in?
I think I have a couple of options. I could definitely do a breakfast. I could definitely do a lunch. I hadn't determined that yet, but I'll make sure, Rose, that you do know.
That's always top of mind for me, food. Incoming superintendent for the Decatur City Schools, Dr. Jamie Whitaker, thank you so much for taking the time. Best of luck to you. We'll come back and check in with you after a few months. We'll give you a few months on a job, and we'll check back in with you. I really appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate you as well. Thank you, Rose.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. Ah, yes. May is here, and of course, that means this. That's right. Get out the tissues and cameras as everybody's going to take a picture. Those graduates will begin to walk. Congratulations, first of all, to the class of 2023. Graduation season is upon us, and every year, Closer Look profiles a few area graduates to come in and share this part of their educational journey. And so to get us started, Tierra Grant, first up, congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Tierra is a Georgia State University Perimeter graduate. Listen, how excited are you for, you know, you? This is part of the whole journey, but you've gotten to this part right here.
Yeah, I'm ecstatic, honestly.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm ready for the next step.
Okay.
Mostly, but.
Let me ask you this. Maybe let's go back 5 years ago. Were you thinking about this part of your life? You know?
No. I didn't grow up thinking much about college because, in my family, no one, we didn't really talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I didn't grow up thinking that college was an option for me because of money.
Yeah.
All the shows that I watched, no one looked like me, like the teenage dramas or whatever. So I didn't think about it that much 5 years ago.
You thought because it would cost a lot of money, you wouldn't be able to attend?
Yeah, and no one in my family has been to college.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really talked about until about 11th grade, where I was doing really well in school, straight A student, and I skipped a grade.
You graduated, you were at the top of your class in, 2015?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so all that happened, and in the 11th grade, all of a sudden, I was bombarded with, so what are you, going to do? What college are you going to go to? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I didn't really think about it that much, but I knew that I love school. Mm-hmm. I love to learn.
Yeah.
So I just had to take some time to figure myself out.
Now, you're also one of those students that you all had to earn your degree and take classes during COVID. And
yes.
Yeah. What was that transition like?
It was pretty hard. In the beginning, it was around the time when the rent moratorium was about to end. Mm-hmm. So I had to deal with facing eviction on top of going to
school. Were
you
living by yourself then? Or
no, I was living with my mom.
Your mom. So yeah. you and your mom were facing eviction.
Yeah. So that was a tough period because I couldn't really work full time because I was a full time student and there's just like a lot of stuff on my plate. So during that time, I had to, and like I'm an online student at college, so I had to make sure like I turned in my assignments on time, but without anyone really telling me how to kind of organize my time. So to deal with that, on top of making sure I get all of my assignments in and study while we're going to court, all of that.
It was, how did you manage that? That's stressful.
I think it was because of my friends. I had a pretty good support system at the time outside of what was happening. And I think without that, I don't think I would have dropped out or anything. I did kind of think about that at the time because I knew like I needed to work. But thank God I didn't really have to do that. So
you're taking classes online. Mm-hmm. It's pandemic. You and your mom have some challenges, just quality of life, housing. Mm-hmm. But you didn't give up.
No.
But you told our producers that, you know, you did experience a little bit of depression here. You had to work through that.
Yes. So during the pandemic, also dealing with mental health. Mm-hmm. And without access to therapy, things like that because of the money issue.
Yeah.
In my head, therapy was like this big thing where there's just a lot of money. And even when I tried to find one, sometimes like for a screening, it's a couple hundred dollars. And during that time, we could even like barely get food. So I had to look to books, a lot of podcasts. Thank God for the internet. There's a lot of inspirational people. Mm-hmm. Online.
That's true.
Yeah, for people that don't.
To counter all the badness out there, there's some good resources. Yeah, there's some good.
So I kind of looked to that and didn't give up on that there was some kind of light at the end of it all. So.
And you got through it. Yeah. And you're managing it. You're getting through it.
Yes. Now I'm in therapy. We discovered this option called sliding scale, where as a student, I'm like able to pay what I can. And that has had a huge impact on me. And I think with my grades as well, because even during that time I did like have A's, I had more, I guess, confidence in my ability to be proud of those grades, to put myself out there. Because I put myself out there for the Jack Kent Cook scholarship, and I actually got semi-finalists for it.
Congratulations. Yeah.
And 5 years ago, I would have never thought that I would even be considered for something like that. So yeah, that's kind of how that went.
How important is it, Tara, to have support? Because that helps in your confidence in achieving whatever that goal is going to be. So you had your friends, you took it upon yourself to find some type of therapeutic remedies here for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to major in psychology. So you all that you've been through, this is also on your path.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So having the right support system, or even if you don't, because there were times when I didn't have the friends that I had that I had to be alone. I had to kind of sit with the pain, and I've also had to deal with trauma from other past events. I've dealt with domestic violence from my first high school boyfriend. My self-esteem was basically like just at rock bottom. but putting myself out there during school and just even on the internet, you can meet some people that have the same values, the same goals, mm-hmm. and being validated in those ways.
In a positive way.
Yeah, can just do wonders, and then you don't feel so alone after.
So. How's your mom?
She's good.
Yeah. She listening?
Yeah.
Hi, Mom.
She's doing much better now, yeah. And she also has some health issues.
Okay. But you all are. Yeah, you're managing. You're getting.
Yeah, she's gotten much better.
You gonna major in psychology? You gonna pursue it as a career? Any particular? Do you want to work with youth or any particular area? Trauma? What do you want to do here?
I think right now the plan is to get my master's degree to get a license to become a therapist, yeah. to help other people like me that were, you know, in the same spot. But beyond that, I do want to think more about the research aspect, mm-hmm. going to like the PhD level, mm-hmm. to like learn more about how trauma reshapes the psyche.
Yeah.
It kind of just turned my whole world upside down in like the blink of an eye. And then for years after, I had to kind of go through this journey of rebuilding myself, and it's not impossible. Mm-hmm. And I think there is not enough research or emphasis on the effects of trauma, mm-hmm. especially with Black people, mm-hmm. with people of color. So I kind of want to, I'm playing around with the idea of seeing how those two kind yeah. of come together and how we can better more people.
So what do you want to say to someone who's listening who might be a student, where you've been, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with just life issues, trying to go to school, you know, life happens, you know, who may feel like, wow, this is a lot, this is too much, how can I get through it? What do you say to them?
I would say that, just as cliche as it sounds, just do not give up. There will be many times that you feel like you just want to give in, that you don't want to turn in that assignment, that you don't have enough energy to study for your tests. There will be a lot of those times when you don't even want to like get out of bed and show up to class. But if your best that day is 50%, do 50%. Mm-hmm. Don't try to strive to overextend yourself, and make sure you take care of yourself in the process above anything else.
Take care of yourself. Yourself come first. Yes. You mentioned the Jack Kent Cook undergraduate. It's a transfer scholarship, right?
Yes.
So what does this do for you now?
If I get the scholarship, then I will have the ability to go to almost any school I wanted, which I never thought would be an option for me. So yeah. Right now I'm looking toward Oglethorpe, schools like that, and Georgia State, you know, mm-hmm. just like staying in that realm as well, because I do enjoy the school. So yeah, it kind of like opened up a lot of doors for me.
Wow, how different is this tier grant from the one from 5 years ago? Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge
You're talking
difference.
To Rose Scott on NPR.
Yeah. I would have never dreamed of doing anything like this at all.
Yeah.
So.
And how excited are you for when graduation? And this is just the first beginning, because you're a first-generation college student, online student.
Yeah.
At Georgia State University's Perimeter College. So, wow. How excited are you when you...
I am very excited. You know, I mean, I was just working alone in my room for the past 2 years. So it's nice to get acknowledged mm-hmm. for what I've achieved and all the, like, the hard work that I put in. So I can't wait to yeah. just hold it in my hands. Even though it's my first, like, it's the first one. I'm not done yet, but yeah. I'm so happy to reach this milestone. So.
And congratulations. And we are ecstatic for you as well. Where do you think you'll be in 10 years? Do you think you'll have your own practice or, yeah?
Yeah, I think having my own private practice, or maybe even if I get to the doctorate level, being a professor.
You will. You will. Yeah,
helping anyone I can.
Yeah.
Any, like, as many people as I can that were in my place.
So this is the part of the program where we break a little bit of our normal just one-on-one, and we say, hey, Tiara, now you can take a minute and thank anybody you want to thank.
I definitely want to thank my family.
Yeah.
Because without them during that hard time, during the pandemic, none of this would have happened. I definitely want to thank my friends and the people that I've met along the way that maybe I'm not connected to right now.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of just like small pockets here and there of people that I've met that have had a huge impact on me. And even people like Bell Hooks.
Of course.
Toni Morrison. Of course. They transformed.
Oh, we have a whole nother show talking about Toni Morrison and Bell Hooks. I had a guest on not too long ago who was a personal friend of Bell Hooks. I've been there. I know what it's like to have those folks. You may not know them personally, but you have their books, mm-hmm. and they help you along the way.
Transformed the way I think about myself in the best way. So,
well, congratulations again, Tiara Grant, first generation college student and online student, and a Georgia State University's Perimeter College 2023 graduate, major in psychology. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Keep that smile. And that is it for this edition of Closer Look. Our producers are LaShawn Hudson and Daniel Razel. Our supervising producer is Tiffany Griffith. Our engineer is Sawyer Vanderwerf. And a reminder to let us know your thoughts on today's program or any other, send me an email, rose@wabe.org. And as always, if you missed any of today's program, it is online. It's always online. wabe.org/closerlook. And of course, you can listen to Closer Look weeknights at 7 p.m. as well as in our broadcast. So subscribe to Closer Look wherever you like. And we're looking for amazing graduate stories. So just email me, rose@wabe.org. Stay tuned to WABE from Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.